Welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. The great vote on Brexit has been cancelled. News has been leaking out of number 10 this morning, but Theresa May has decided not to go ahead with it in the certain knowledge she would be defeated by quite a large margin. So why did she make this decision and what happens next? I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls to discuss. So, Katie, it's been quite a morning. I mean, first of all, number 10 was denying it. I mean, only a few hours ago it was saying, no, the vote's definitely going to go ahead. So one has the image of a kind of ferocious battle inside number 10, with the whip saying, we're going to lose this, her saying nothing has changed. So what do you think has been happening this morning?
Well, we saw over the weekend that number 10 were just insistent that this vote was definitely going ahead, even though there are several reports suggesting otherwise. And we had a situation where we had Stephen Barclay, the Brexit secretary, and even Michael Gove as recently as this morning going onto the airwaves and saying this vote is definitely going ahead. Now, where things started to change is that there was a conference call, an emergency cabinet conference call called this morning, and ministers found out about this about an hour before it happened at 11:30. Now, I spoke to a minister who had been summoned to that, and they speculated that they thought the vote was going to be called off. Number 10 Len used an official lobby briefing to tell Hacks that any such speculation was wrong and the vote was going to go ahead. So I think right now you're getting a picture of a chaotic government, if you can call it a government, really, making these decisions. And it seems that in that meeting, and also just behind the scenes, the pressure that has been put on Theresa May by lots of cabinet ministers making the point that if she loses this vote by a massive margin, it wouldn't just be her Brexit deal that was potentially dead, it would perhaps be her entire government has finally hit home and a decision has been made that they need to postpone it. Now, the slight caveat to this is they have to work out how they're going to postpone it, because there's been some speculation it might involve a vote.
Well, they need to win a vote in Parliament in order to win permission not to have a vote on Brexit.
Exactly. And now government aides think they have found a way around that, but I would expect a fight over the next day of people trying to make that vote still happen, because it is in the benefit of Theresa May's critics to have a humiliating vote for the government.
Now, James, the question is what problem this solves, because unless the EU is going to fundamentally change the withdrawal agreement, then I can't see her prospects of winning this get any better. I get, unless, of course, she reckons that right now, I mean, we're talking middle of December, people might conceivably argue that we'd have 3 months to prepare for no deal. Might be harder to argue that in late January. That might make a bit of a difference. I'm not sure how much. So do you think she thinks that the EU is going to give her more as a result of this decision?
I mean, there are a few things going on here. The first is, I mean, the scale of the defeat was going to be so large, as Katie said, but I think it could have kind of capsized the government. I mean, if they were going to carry on with this vote, the cabinet might all as well have joined hands and sang "Nearer My God" to V. You cannot lose a vote by the margins that they were on course to lose it.
And what figures? I mean, all sorts of figures were bandied around, but I heard it said, for example, it was if she'd lost by more than 100 votes, she would have to go. If she lost them more than 200 votes, her government would collapse.
I think if she lost by a three-figure amount, it would have been very hard for her to keep going. And then in the chaos that would have followed, I don't think you could have been certain that the Tory party wouldn't have split. I don't think that's a melodramatic thing to say. So I think she's got two hopes. The first, as you said, is to simply take time out of a game by essentially saying, right, we'll come back with this in January. In January, it'll be that much harder to say, well, I'll go back to the EU and renegotiate the backstop. Because if Theresa May has tried and failed to renegotiate the backstop, why should it work for somebody else? You know, Boris Johnson, who they are certainly less fond of than they are of Theresa May, for example. That will be her argument. The second thing is the theory that there are some things you could do to the backstop to assuage some of the DUP's concerns that wouldn't mean it wasn't a backstop. For example, you know, one of the things the DUP are very angry about is that there's no Stormont lock in this backstop, which there was in the December joint report. So, you know, no idea that Stormont would have to approve any divergence between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK. So I think that is where she is looking. But I think given the scale of the changes she's seeking, I don't think the plan is to pop up at the European Council at the end of this week and then come back on Monday and say, let's have the vote, we're ready to go.
Now, Casey, this is the way that British government works. Governments tend not to lose by more than 100 votes because the whips work out in advance if a defeat is coming, in which case they just pool the vote. Why go through with it? Now, the answer to that question in this case is that the EU would need to see her failing by a big amount if they're going to give something meaningful. We've always suspected they might issue a so-called clarification, like in the way they tried to buy off the Irish, well, I guess successfully with their two referendums on the Nice Treaty. But will the fact that she hasn't lost a vote and the numbers people expected make it harder for her to say to the EU, look, you really need to give me something? Because right now, I imagine they'll think, OK, it's time for one of our clarifications and maybe you can scuttle off back to London and win the vote this time.
Well, I think in fairness, the message is quite clear. Whether or not she's had this vote, it's clear that the reason she's pulling it is not just because she was a bit busy this week, wanted to get some Christmas shopping done. It's because she was facing a humiliating defeat that could have capsized her government. So I think that would have been heard. Do I think that the EU will now say, let's open up the legally binding EU withdrawal document? Probably not. I think the problem for Theresa May is any tweaks or clarifications, they're going to want to put in the political declaration, which is not legally binding. Yeah. They are very reluctant to open up the legally binding part, partly because they think that is opening up a can of worms. EU member states might start wanting to tinker with it. But if you speak to the DUP and even Brexiteer MPs who are perhaps looking for a reason to back this agreement, not the ones who want it gone, whatever, I think they would be very hard to satisfy these people with something which isn't legally binding. They want a change which is legally binding, and I think that is Theresa May's big problem.
And I guess we also saw last week with the fuss about the Attorney General's legal advice, but this is what it boils down to. I mean, it's not just that they won't accept clarifications from the EU, they won't accept them from number 10. They want to see lawyers agreeing there's been fundamental change, and if that's not on the menu, James, then I can't really see what would realistically move the dial. So in a way, has this upped the stakes and made the cost of defeat greater than it would have been had they had the vote tomorrow?
Yes and no. In that, this is basically one of, you know, I think she was going to get two goes to get this through. She's essentially used up one of those goes. I think having done this now, she can't now lose the vote when she finally brings it in January by 40-odd votes and then hope to bring it back another time, which she could have done if she kind of pressed on with this vote. I mean, the point, as Katie said, she was going to lose by simply too big a margin to credibly bring it back. Better international lawyers than me say that there are ways that you can introduce some legally binding changes without having to open up the actual document itself.
Well, you can make an amendment to the treaty that changes the treaty but isn't in the treaty.
Or that there can be kind of letters exchanged, which are a particular form of legal letter which would have a force. Now, I mean, one possibility is the government keeps saying, well, I mean, if you look at the Attorney General's legal advice, he keeps saying, well, look, this can't be permanent, this backstop, because the EU does not allow for this to be permanent because Article 50 cannot determine the permanent future relationship. I wonder whether we're going to get a letter from the Commission Legal Service or something like that saying that any backstop that lasted for more than 2 years or more than 3 years would be in violation of EU law. Now, that wouldn't be the EU giving a concession, but it would enable Theresa May to turn around to people and say, well, we can't be trapped in the backstop forever because there is a three-year limit that the EU themselves are operating to.
Well, but that's the EU legal service. But Katie, something else pretty fundamental has happened today. I mean, James talks about Britain being given assurance by the EU legal service. Well, there was also an assurance given to the EU in Article 50 of the EU's effective constitution, saying that if a member state votes to leave, like Britain, they've got 2 years to sort it out, and this can only be extended by mutual agreement. What's happened today is that the ECJ has overridden this. I have no idea how they can claim that how they got the authority to do this, but they said, no, actually Britain can unilaterally revoke Article 50. Now, set aside whether we'd want to revoke Article 50, if we're in an environment where the rules change, the goalposts change, where the ECJ can at any point, years later, decide what a law says and doesn't say, doesn't that mean that whatever assurances were given over Brexit would be pretty shaky because the whole thing is based on the moving goalpost of the ECJ?
Yeah, so this is the ECJ ruling suggesting that the UK can unilaterally revoke Article 50. Now, this seems slightly surprising given that we know the EU are not very keen on unilateral exits when it comes to the backstop. But it feeds into this idea that the ECJ is ultimately a political court and the judgments work when it works in their favour. So it is in the EU's benefit to let the UK revoke Article 50 if it wants to and stay in the EU. And that is now the ruling. And I think you've very, very quickly seen conservative Eurosceptics and other point out that, as you just suggested, the point here, it doesn't really make an argument that you should trust the system, because it suggests that they can bend the rules how they like. So although I think this ruling, in a Remainer's mind, will help with the efforts of staying in the EU, I think it will harden resolve against being too reliant on ECJ rulings.
So James, this will have pretty heavily undermined any assurance the EU might therefore give us, because we know that these assurances can be rewritten completely 3 or 4, even 10 years' time, with if the ECJ so chooses.
So I think if you look at why the ECJ has made this decision, one of their reasons is that, you know, it is in the interest of ever closer union to do this. And I think this is one of the problems with the ECJ, which is, you know, it is a political court in much the same way that the US Supreme Court was in the early years of the Republic. I mean, that is that it is trying to keep a political project on the road, and that obviously has effects for how it operates as a court.
James and Katie, thanks very much indeed. You can subscribe to this podcast, Coffeehouse Shots, on the iTunes Store. We'll bring you more developments as they happen.